Hear ye, all persons having any business before this honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention, and you shall be heard.
Please call the case.
Case number SCWC-13-2125, Umberger et al. Versus Department of Land and Natural Resources. Arguing for the petitioners, Summer Kupal Odo. Arguing for the respondent, William J. Weinhoff. Argument on the merits.
All right. Good morning, Ms. Kupal Odo and Mr. Weinhoff. Are you both ready to proceed today? You are. All right. Ms. Kupal Odo, you've reserved 10 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll have a warning light go on at that point. In your argument, Mr. Weinhoff, you've reserved 5 minutes, or you've asked for a five-minute warning, so we'll give you that as well. Please proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. Summer Kupal Odo on behalf of petitioners. Some of them are present this morning.
Good morning.
This case concerns the Department of Land and Natural Resources practice of rubber stamping dozens of permits each year that enable unlimited industrial scale extractions of fish and other wildlife from our reefs in the millions for private profit, all without the slightest consideration of environmental impacts. Petitioners brought this lawsuit to enforce the Hawaii Environmental Policy Act, the cornerstone of our state's environmental protections, which provides a specific review process to be integrated with agency decision making through cooperation, consultation, and public participation. Consultation, as this court has noted in Kahana Sunset, it allows for other agencies, citizen groups, and individuals it's critical for them so that agencies will have the necessary information to understand any potential environmental ramifications of their decisions. But the DLNR, the very agency charged with managing and conserving our reef resources, it refuses to comply with HEPA, and the ICA erred in condoning DLNR's irresponsible and illegal permitting practice. The narrow legal issue before the court today is whether aquarium collection under each permit DLNR issues constitutes a HEPA program or project. Relying on dictionary definitions, both the ICA and the circuit court acknowledge the plain meaning of program or project, that it's broad, that it encompasses aquarium collection under a permit. But without any justifiable basis, the ICA simply declined to enforce HEPA, its plain language, and apply the statute to aquarium collection permits because it was concerned that the one or two fish mom and pop collector should not have to prepare environmental assessments.
Ms. Kupal, can you answer that concern expressed by the ICA? If you say that a program or project is each application, how would a parent who's trying to collect fish for a child for a home aquarium?
Yes.
You're not saying that should involve an entire HEPA process, right?
Well, it does constitute a program or project, but if the ICA had then examined the entire statute, we would have seen, and we actually argued this to the ICA, that there's an exemption process. So even though it's an applicant action.
If I go down with my daughter to the North Shore and we decide to collect aquarium fish and I use a net whose mesh is bigger than 2 inches, I'm subject to this collection permit? I don't think so, because the website says I don't have to. In other words, you're not even subject to the permit. This one or two fish, if you go down to any place other than it looks like West Hawaii, if you go down and collect a fish, even if you use a 2-inch mesh and your net is 3 feet or less in dimensions, you're not subject to this permit. In fact, it looks like you can use even a slurp gun, for example, to collect the fish, and you're not subject. So this whole one or two fish model doesn't even apply unless you have a specific kind of net.
Yes, unless unless you're the person requesting to use the underside or the fine mesh net as defined in the regulations, that is correct. And there are 160 commercial applicants at the time we filed a complaint who had that permission to use that smaller net size and to capture an unlimited amount of fish.
How many recreational at that time?
At that time, I'm not, well, that's not in the record, but I do have numbers about the time, the 120 days during the statute of limitations period. So that was 124 actually issued during that time frame. 53 of those were commercial, so 70 about would have been recreational.
In that 120-day period?
Just in that 120-day period. But I did want to clarify that, but at the time of our complaint, so if you use that as a standard, at any given moment, there are 160 commercial permits out there.
Well, you know, putting aside, and it may well be that one can use a net that's with mesh greater than 2 inches, but if for some reason somebody chooses to use a smaller net and that person is a mom or pop collector, what exactly would they have to do under the petitioner's view of the law?
They are subject to HEPA, so under HRS 343-5E, the agency shall require them to prepare an environmental assessment, but as this court noted in Kahana Sunset, and in the Super Ferry case, that's not the end of the inquiry when it comes to projects with de minimis impacts or de minimis actions with negligible impacts. So looking at this one or two fish collector, if it truly does exist, the agency can then apply the exemption process. And indeed, DLNR, just a year and a half ago, got approval from the Environmental Council of its own exemption list. And that exemption list has 171 exemptions.
So what's the process mom would have to go through?
Very simple. It's, again, submitting the permit application. DLNR then can assess what they intend to do, their project, look at it, and decide if there's negligible impacts, write a letter to file. But they do have to find that it would not significantly affect the environment. That's an additional inquiry. I believe that's under Kahana Sunset and the Super Ferry case as being that last level of in its analysis. But it's a simple process. Look at the Aulani Aquarium example that we submitted attached to our motion for summary judgment. DLNR has acknowledged that aquarium collection is a project under HEPA to then take the next step and exempt that aquarium collection for the Aulani pool from HEPA review, from having to prepare an environmental assessment. The problem here is that we have an agency that has just decided not to apply this law, this important environmental protection, and if it had, it would not have the problem of this mom and pop fish collector, and that's something that the ICA did not perceive in rendering its decision.
Could what about I ask the impact? I'm sorry, just this.
Go ahead.
What about the impact that the ICA hypothesized on other types of programs like camping permits, hunting, fishing permits? What potential impact would the rule that you advocate for here have on folks who are applying for permits in those contexts?
First of all, I think that how HEPA applies in the other context is really irrelevant, but it doesn't change the analysis, right? You go to the HEPA framework. First, you decide, well, under these permits or licenses, is a project or program being proposed? Is there discretionary consent required from the agency? Next step, then, does it fall under one of the 9 statutory triggers? If those 3 criteria are met, then yes. No matter what permit or license it is, you must require the applicant to prepare an environmental assessment. But again, that's not the end of the analysis. You then take the step of determining whether they would be exempt from the EA.
Does a camping permit give you unlimited ability to camp in a national forest or state park for a year, and in addition give you the ability to take as many birds or as much insects or snails as you wish, or if it's for recreational, allow you to take 2,000 and allow you to bring in special gear in order to harvest it? I haven't ever seen a camping permit quite like that.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's why, I mean, drawing these comparisons really was not useful for the ICA. It did not support its reading or lack of a reading. Again, it didn't come up with an alternative interpretation to the plain reading. It just decided we're not going to apply it, and look at all these other permits that may be affected, when that was not our burden. We are looking at a very specific permit, again, that allows for the unlimited extraction of our resources. This goes to the department's public trust and other statutory duties to conserve these resources. It states that as its mission on its website. In Kauai Springs, most recently, this court said that when agencies are involved with permitting of natural resources, you must advance the public rights at every stage of the planning and decision-making process.
Does it matter whether it's commercial or not? Again, I think in your opening remarks you referred to for-profit, but I want to be clear. Your view is that the obligation to prepare an EA, or at least to go through the analysis, applies both to recreational and commercial permittees in this context?
Yes, I want to be very clear that in determining whether you have a HEPA action, it does apply to both commercial and recreational. It doesn't matter, because any person that's coming forward under chapter or under HRS 188-31 to get an aquarium collection permit is proposing a project. That's the plain and obvious meaning of the term. It fits. But not everyone would have to prepare an environmental assessment and go through the review process, because there are mechanisms in the law.
So one person going to get a couple of fish for their child is a project, in your view?
Yes, because of the broad meaning of the terms and the
How so would that be a project?
Well, the definition, again, that both the circuit court and the ICA relied on, dictionary definition of project is a specific plan or design or scheme, or a planned undertaking. Of course, these are planned undertakings. You're going down to trap fish to stock an aquarium. And in fact, you must, in order to get the permit under the statute, you must satisfy the department that you have the means to keep the fish alive. All of that is preparation. It takes planning. And there is a reason why, right? I mean, when you look at the purpose and policies of HEPA, it was the legislature in 343-1 just stating that we acknowledge the broad and profound impact of humanity's activities on the environment. So that's why it casts a very broad net to encompass all kinds of human activities, or deliberate human activities, where there's planning. Right?
Now, if DLNR were to adopt an exemption for, say, recreational users, how would that work in terms of the process you described? An applicant would come in, and they would check a box that would say recreational use, and that would then involve the automatic application of that exemption, or does it require some review, weighing of evidence, discretion?
Yes, it does require discretion on the part of the agency to evaluate the proposal. But if mom and pop just came forward and said, we want to collect one or two fish from X stream on a given day at a certain time, then it would have that information before it. And sure, I mean, it may be as simple as saying, yeah, that fits under exemption class 1, number 10, and we are writing up that we declare this will have no impact on the environment. But
actually, DLNR could just create an exemption system for, like, up to 10 fish a year for the mom and pop people, as we've been discussing. But the recreational permits here, I understand, allow collection of up to 2,000 animals a year?
A year, yes.
So in other words, it could be 2,000 of those eels that cost $250 each or something like that, that sell for that much?
Exactly.
So a recreational user under the statutes right now, or the permits right now, cannot sell?
Yes, they cannot sell, but it's so odd because the one rule that DLNR promulgated to regulate the industry or regulate under this permitting structure applies just to recreational collectors, which is that 5 per day limit. So we're talking about the deeper problem of the lack of management of this aquarium fishery when it's removed millions.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but could I ask you a bit about your concept of a lack of management? You mentioned the public trust responsibility. I'm interested in what you're referring to in terms of authority for that. We have Article 11, Section 1, that speaks to a public trust responsibility, but also there is a section that is an interesting section dealing with marine resources in our Constitution that has language that says shall protect the public's use and enjoyment of the reef. So getting back to this idea of management consistent with the public trust, if, correct me if I'm wrong, if the record is not clear, that the present management system allows for unlimited taking of fish for commercial purposes. If you get a permit, there's no limit. Is that correct?
There's no limit on, well, I mean, so I want to be clear, though, there are, which has been cited by the ICA, bag limits, size limits for certain species, but not all. And there are many more that the industry, yes, is free to take. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Justice.
For purposes of aquarium fish collecting, though, the permit itself doesn't have a limit on number, does it?
No.
And the recreational permitting system, again, referring to the management system, allows for, as Justice McKenna said, maybe 2,000 a year. So I'm interested in the extent to which your position is that the public trust is not being met given this management program. We have some affidavits that suggest that there isn't much enforcement going on, and affidavits that also speak to what the impact is actually of this regulatory management system on the reef itself, coral. So to the extent that you're familiar with the record, can you give me some idea what in the record suggests that there is a program in place now that is able to monitor the number of fish that are actually being taken, and there is enforcement taking place so that there is an understanding of the extent to which the reef is being affected?
There is none. There is no program by this agency to monitor the aquarium fishery.
Your remedy that you're asking for, the relief you're asking for, I think is injunctive relief. Is that correct?
First, declaratory. An injunction, yeah. I think once the court issues...
Can you explain why you feel that there is a basis at this point for injunctive relief?
I don't think the department would dispute that it's renewing and handing out permits as they come in, even as we sit here. With just a few clicks of a mouse, an applicant can get both a commercial permit and a recreational permit through the online permitting dispensary. So
it's my understanding from the affidavit of Mr. Miyasaka that DLNR has never denied a permit.
Yes.
For
yeah.
commercial use. Is that correct?
Yes. They admit to that, and that's all I'll say at that point. I think the problem we have here, and actually what you just raised, Justice Wilson, it makes me think, the unfairness. If we're talking about the public resources, why is it that the recreational users should be limited and not this commercial for-profit industry?
I'm just interested in whether you have an understanding of the record that would suggest the basis from a management point of view of having a process where the department's position is that it will always grant a permit, so there could be an unlimited number of permits that have no limitation on the number of fish that can be taken within the permit.
I'm sorry, so the question is what in the record suggests that other than Miyasaka?
Is there some scientific basis for the idea that all permits are granted whenever applied for, and that when the permit is granted, there's no limit in the permit for the number of fish that can be taken?
No, there is no discretion, and they admitted to that in arguing that second point, that they don't apply discretion, and that's the fundamental problem.
I'm sorry, they don't have discretion, or they're taking the position that they don't have discretion?
They said that they don't in practice exercise any discretion to support the argument that...
But the statute says may.
Yes, and we don't want this court to touch that issue. The ICA was correct on that point. Thank you for that clarification. But yes, the whole problem here, we don't know. There's no transparency. HIPAA and what it was modeled after, NEPA, other state analogs, I mean, these are cornerstones of environmental protections that ensure public participation, that the public will know how the agency is making decisions.
Could you explain to me where in the law, what part of the law prohibits a recreational collector from selling?
I think it's in, it's the rule on that bag, or the limit.
Okay.
I think it's in there. And then there's a definition about what commercial collection is.
I think it's in 1377. 13. To recreational aquarium fish permit means a valid aquarium fish permit issued to a person for non-commercial use.
Yes, non.
So theoretically, that may mean you cannot sell it. It's not definitive.
But it's not explicit that you cannot sell if you have a recreational permit.
Yes, it's not explicit. And looking at the statute there, it doesn't distinguish.
Ms. Capello, if I could ask you, your theory in this case was that you were talking about an applicant action, correct? In other words,
yes.
What about agency action? Was that a theory that you had considered, or is it raised in any way? In other words, why not look at this, the agency's action in having a program or not having a program, and require the agency to prepare an environmental assessment with regard to that, as opposed to the individual permits? Is that something that you had considered? Was it in play at all in the circuit court, if not, why not?
First of all, we pled that these are applicant actions, each one, under each permit issued by the department. And thinking about whether there's an agency action, there is none, because, again, there's no management program.
But why isn't the agency creating this permitting process an agency project or program?
It should. It has every...
But you didn't argue that theory.
No, we did not. Our case is about applicant action, but that's another option of dealing with the ICA's concern for the de minimis collector. If the agency itself had its own management program to issue these permits, it could look at all the data. It could decide, how to issue the permits by exercising, as it's obligated to, discretion. And, yes, that does go to the deeper problem here.
So that's another possible theory, but not one that was advanced to the circuit court.
No. Our case is about applicant actions, and very clearly HIPAA applies, and that's what we're asking the court to rule today.
Are you aware of any studies that have been done by the Department of Land and Natural Resources on the impact of the reefs and the fish population of Oahu from this management system?
Am I aware of any studies? You could take a look at the Grabowski Declaration.
I'm asking about studies done by the Department of Land and Natural Resources.
I don't know of any. I'm thinking about the record on Oahu, but West Hawaii.
I was asked. So my question was, are you aware of any studies that have been done by the Department of Land and Natural Resources on the impact of coral and the fish species, the coral fish species, from the management system that is represented by this permitting?
No. To my knowledge, none. And I see that I'm going into my rebuttal time, if my reserve.
Very well.
Thank you.
Mr. Weinoff.
Thank you. May it please the court. William Weinhoff, representing the state of Hawaii in this case. To deal with at least one of the questions, the record indicates that, and as the Chief Justice...
I'm sorry, could you raise your microphone?
Yeah,
I'm having
sure.
A real problem.
Thank you very much.
It would
be nice if you guys heard me. In the 120 days before the complaint was filed, there were 53 commercial permits issued, 71 commercial permits issued. That's in the record at 202.
You said 53 commercial and 71 commercial.
Yes, in the record at 202.
Both commercial? No. How many recreational and how many commercial?
53 commercial.
Got it.
Thank you, Your Honor. And 71 recreational permits issued in the 120 days before the complaint was filed. The significance of the 120 days, of course, is the statute of limitations contained in Chapter 343. I do not know the answer to the court's question of how many permits are outstanding either now or at any particular time. The statutory scheme requires that they be for 1 year only, so I suppose we could extrapolate those numbers more or less. Your Honors, in all aspects of the case, and I think rightfully so, I don't dispute this, but a lot of the issue that has been discussed and was discussed in all aspects of the case, including the argument here, is whether or not it's a good idea to do this the way that the department does it. And I think that is an important question, but I don't think it is the most important question for this case. And in fact, I'm really at a disadvantage in arguing whether or not it's a good idea, because it was a necessary point of my argument below that I didn't take that on the merits. Because if the question of whether or not it's a good idea is the determining factor, then necessarily you'd have to do an environmental review. But that's not the way the statute works.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to get clarification. You said if it is a good idea. I wasn't sure what you were referring to when you said
the question
it.
The question is the way, I guess it's been referred to, a management plan, which I don't necessarily agree is a good characterization of it, but the way that the aquarium fishing industry is managed or not managed, run or not run, whether that's a good idea is logically anterior to the question of whether we have to do a 343. The question of whether we have to do a 343 turns on the question of what is the definition of action. Throughout this case, we have emphasized the first question was what is the action, of course, and there's been some varying discussion of that. Originally, the appellant's point of view was that it was aquarium collection. We had a very robust discussion of that in front of Judge Castagnetti, in which that's what they said their definition, that the action in question was. It's always been an applicant action. Again, that question was raised. Could it be an agency action? I would submit to the answer to that is no. There's not any precedent that there's lots of instances in which agencies issue permits for private people to do that, but there's never been any precedent for the fact that the agency issues permits makes something that a private person wants to do an agency action rather than an applicant action. So I would just say that.
In terms of other natural resources, for example, natural resources on land,
yes,
there's no EA or 343 process? In other words, I'm a little unfamiliar with this, but is there any permitting process for example, removing COA from conservation lands?
I guess I'm just going to have to say I really don't know the answer to that. It's certainly possible that one could be used. I mean, and this is where I was sort of going with this, too, is the way, of course, the court knows, and we all know, and we discuss this, I'm getting back to your question. I'm not really going away from it, but the law is structured such that any action that meets one of these triggers needs to be studied unless it's exempt. Okay, and so that means that the first question is what is an action. The next question then is what is a trigger, and the triggers include use of conservation district land, so that's broad. The triggers also include any use of state land or state funds. So in direct response to the court's question, taking COA off of conservation district land would in fact involve a trigger. Whether it could involve an action, again, that's the question. What is an action? It would certainly seem to me that go ahead, Justice Wilson. I'm sorry.
I think I know where you're going, Mr. Weinhoff, but I just wanted to ask you if you could make clear your definition of action hinging upon whether it's a private applicant acting to use state land or to extract from state waters. If it's a private action, then, I mean, if it's a private activity, then it wouldn't be an action. Was that your thought?
No, Your Honor. Thank you for asking that question. That's a really good question. I haven't forgotten Justice McKenna's question either, and I have a little more to say on that, but if I might circle to...
Can you get a little bit closer to the microphone?
Yes,
thank
you.
Sorry.
When you guys have trouble hearing me, yes. Thank you so much for letting me know. I really appreciate it. That's always been one of my problems, so thank you. Of course, it's very important to me that you do hear me. With respect to your question, Justice Wilson, so what I had talked about was, what I was talking about is what actually the action was that we talked about throughout. And then the other thing that I was going to turn to is, what is the definition of action? So we, you know, throughout this case, the appellants did go back and forth with what they thought the actual action was. But with respect to the definition of action, they have been, and I'm going to say that I have been too, but they have been in fact been consistent. The very first thing that they argued with respect to action was in their motion for summary judgment at footnote 1 on whatever page it was, 9 or something. They looked to CEQA and said that under CEQA, the California Equal Environmental Quality Act, an action, the term project, I think, is defined in CEQA. In CEQA, the definition of project, and therefore action here, is basically, action which has the potential for a direct or indirect change to the environment.
Yeah, but why don't you address the plain language? I appreciate it. The California, although I think, example, but what about the sort of plain language argument that I understood Ms. Kupau-Odo to be raising, which is, if you look at the dictionary definition of program or project, they're very broad, specific plan or design or a schedule or system under which action may be taken towards a desired goal. And her argument is, applying for the permit, having to come up with a plan for how you're going to keep the fish alive, certifying that you're going to do certain things, and then going out or doing them fits the plain language definition of a project or a plan. What's your reaction to that?
So. My reaction
and
to that,
and that's what I understood her argument.
And I think that's fair, and I think it goes to exactly what I was saying, is throughout the case they've been basically saying it means any purposeful human activity. And they, in their cert petition, they said it exactly that. And so my answer to that, is it's a structural argument from the structure of HEPA, which is very different from the other arguments that they use. The important thing about HEPA is
Justice
that...
Chief Justice just asks you to apply the definitions that were applied by the ICA and the Circuit Court. Can we just move on to that?
Why
isn't what's going on when someone applies to take aquarium fish and what they are proposing to do, why isn't it either a project or a program under the dictionary definitions of those terms?
I think the dictionary definitions that we used were
the ones I scribbled were project is a specific plan or design, and program a scheduler system under which action may be taken towards a desired goal. I may have looked at a different dictionary from you, why doesn't it fit? Because it's not just, it's not any human action. It's not taking a step outside of your house. I think she's would concede that it's a series of actions that result in being able to take that fish, remove it in a way that meets the requirements of the law. So it is, I guess, in her argument would be there is an element of purposefulness to it and complexity. That goes beyond any purposeful human activity.
Okay.
And it fits the language of those words.
Well, the language is action, which is defined as a project or a program. So I guess, just to directly answer the argument is, you certainly can make an argument that the word project or program encompasses anything that a human being deliberately does, and it could be argued, it certainly could be read to argue that a project includes, for example, going out and catching one or two fish with a fine mesh.
Okay, so can I, I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'll let you go ahead, Justice Pollack. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I want to, I think with the Chief Justice, and at least I think where I'm going to the same thing. In order to get a commercial, just tell me as I go along, this is what you need in order to get a commercial aquarium fish permit. The first thing you have to do, actually you have to go get a commercial marine permit for your vessel. Is that right?
Yes.
That's the very first thing.
So but I guess I would have to say no, because I don't think you need a vessel necessarily.
If you need a commercial marine permit for a vessel.
If you have a vessel, yes.
Okay. Then after you do that, you're doing this in order for a commercial purpose, which means you're doing it for profit or gain or for livelihood, right?
Yes.
You can't be just doing it for research or giving it away or doing anything like that. For a commercial permit, you have to be doing it for that reason.
Yes, Your Honor.
Then the next thing you have to do, you have to it authorizes you to use specific types of traps or a fine mesh net. So you have to have specific equipment. The next thing, it has to be done for aquarium purposes, which means that you have to be able to hold the aquatic life in a state of alive in a state of captivity.
Yes, Your Honor.
Then you have to satisfy the department that you have the facilities to do this. You folks are supposed to be looking at this and deciding whether or not you have the facilities to do this, that you can maintain the fish not only alive, but in reasonable health. That's another requirement for the permit.
Yes, Your Honor.
Plus, we have all these declarations of folks saying, look, they're using all this sophisticated equipment, GPS, scuba gear, nitrox, all sorts of other equipment in order to do this. And then we have another declaration saying these people work on demand.
Yes, Your Honor.
So this is why the argument that this is not just any activity, this is some organized process that commercial people are doing in order to achieve their goal to sell the aquatic life either here or on the mainland.
I understand that, Your Honor. I thank you for sharpening it for me. And so my response is, for better or worse, that the term, if we start with triggers, that means any use of state land or any use of state property. So there, the position that has been taken by the appellant is that the term action is also a term that is basically coextensive with trigger and has no independent meaning. And so it's our suggestion has been that the term action must have some meaning, because there must be a narrowing principle somewhere in there. If we say that an action is any purposeful human activity, then every use of state land or every use of state funds becomes something that is required by that is required to have a HEPA analysis.
Actually, though, doesn't the 343 allow you to delineate those activities, actions that would not have a significant effect? Oh, for example, couldn't you delineate like hiking in a state park as on a hiking, laid out hiking trail as something, although it is a use within a conservation district, would not have a significant effect, therefore is going to be exempt? Or yes, you could delineate, you know, a family removing up to 5-10 fish a year is not likely to have a significant effect. I mean, you could create exceptions.
Yes, Your Honor. And
right?
There's actually, so there's other, so with respect to, so my argument is quite frankly, a slippery slope, or it can't really mean that argument, and counsel has very capably, and the court has now asked me, can we create an exemption? Yes, we can create an exemption. The exemption process means that we have to, it involves at least two things. Number one is we have to look at the specific activity and see whether it is in the exemptions that we have created. And number two, we have to consult with outside agencies that have expertise with respect to the process.
And along those lines, you know, your brief says plaintiffs devote considerable effort, as they did below, to arguing that aquarium collection is harming the environment.
Right.
But this is simply false.
Yes.
How do you know it's false without doing a study?
Because the information that we have put in the record is, I put in the record that in Alton Miyasaka's declaration indicates two basic ways of doing it. Number one, I forget the exact number, but I believe it's 68% of the aquarium creatures are caught in one 90-mile stretch. That is the most productive stretch. 35% of that 90 miles is closed off. There's essentially no activity other than Hawaii, most of which is in that area. And
isn't
Oahu.
This the kind Number of one. Information that would be included in an environmental assessment?
Yes. Number two, the information that was in Mr. Miyasaka's document shows that the catch remains constant over many, many, many years. We've had this process in effect for 60
Again,
years.
Again, isn't this the kind of information that would be included
yes.
in an environmental
and number
assessment?
Number three, with respect to the types of aquarium creatures that are covered, Mr. Miyasaka's declaration shows a chart, a bar chart that shows that most of them are invertebrates that reproduce relatively rapidly. So those are the three bases that are in the record.
So in other words, the information is available to do an environmental assessment.
Yes.
And in terms of the concern of these different applicants,
yes.
Perhaps having to do their own EAs,
yes.
doesn't 343.6.1 say that DLNR can prescribe procedures whereby a group of proposed actions may be treated by a single environmental assessment or statement? In
yes.
other words,
yes.
you could require all of these applicants to do one study together.
Yes, that's true.
Well,
I agree.
Well, and Justice Nakayama,
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I have a couple of questions.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
I'm trying to ask a couple of questions. My first one is, you're saying Mr. Miyasaka is saying one thing. The plaintiffs have different affidavits stating another thing. Isn't that the appropriate venue for which summary judgment should not be granted?
The answer to that question is no, and that's what I tried to say earlier, is that the question of whether it's a good idea or needed or not.
No, I'm talking about questions of fact. Oh,
there are,
I understand what you're saying.
So it's a genuine issue of fact, but it's not a material issue.
I understand what you're getting.
Number one. Okay. Number two, now you have a question.
No, my other question is just a theoretical question. Under
yes, Your Honor.
188-31,
yes,
clearly DLNR has the discretion, may issue an aquarium fish permit. Can a department say that they're not acting in a discretionary manner by applying their power indiscriminately, by just saying, you just go online and fill out the form and we'll give it to you, therefore we're not exercising our discretion allowed under the statute, and then avoid any kind of HEPA responsibility by doing that?
Your Honor, that is a very apt question, and I'm going to say the answer to that is yes.
I can't hear you again.
As the statute is and the scheme is presently set up, we do not have discretion. I admitted, and I admit in both courts, and I admit now that I certainly am not going to stand here and say that my clients couldn't set up a system under which they have discretion, but they do not have that discretion now.
And
the only thing we can do is all of them or nothing. I'm sorry.
I just want to be clear.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's the position now.
Yes.
That the Attorney General is advising the Department of Land and Natural Resources that there's no discretion when it comes to granting a commercial permit. Is that correct?
I don't want to say yes or no, but I'll answer it in very few words. And the answer is they must either grant every permit or no permits.
Okay, then following up on that, does the Department of Land and Natural Resources have any public trust responsibility with respect to marine resources, specifically coral and aquarium fish?
Yes, Your Honor.
If there is a system that automatically grants a permit that has no limit to the number of fish that can be taken,
yes.
the commercial permit, and you have affidavits that are unrebutted, I mean, you gave some information about the island of Hawaii, but there's no information that the Department of Land and Natural Resources has done any studies on Oahu, but we do have unrebutted affidavits, for example, from Professor Grabowski talking about the depletion of the resources and her opinion that it's affecting the coral reef.
Yes, sir.
So I think you could see where I'm going. When the department maintains a program without any research whatsoever from the main island that's involved with the aquarium fish collecting, under circumstances that at least, I guess you could say, a person that might be a qualified expert feels is causing the deterioration of the reef and the loss of significant marine resources, aquarium fish that I think the record's clear have an economic value that's significant to the recreational dive industry, then wouldn't it appear that the Attorney General's office is advising the Department of Land and Natural Resources to pursue a policy that violates its public trust under the Constitution?
No, Your Honor. If there was a public trust argument in this case, then going back to Justice Nakayama's question, then the question of whether this was a good idea and what studies we'd done would be an issue of fact, and we would rebut it.
Well, there's
we
no
do that because it's not part of the case, and it's not relevant with respect to the environmental Chapter 343.
Well, let's assume there's an action that's taking place when there's this kind of a system of granting permits.
Okay.
And that the action, therefore, would suggest that you would look at the consequences of the action and deciding whether or not injunctive relief should be granted.
Okay.
Now, is there any evidence that you're aware of that has that's from the Department of Land and Natural Resources about the consequences on the reef and the aquarium fish species, the consequences from this permitting system?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and what is that?
The information in Mr. Miyasaka's affidavit that I just described.
His affidavit seems to be rather straightforward about how he is discussing information that pertains to studies that have been done on the Big Island. Do you see any studies that have been done on Oahu?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you.
What
so
about?
I guess that I want to go back to that question again is, and I mentioned this a couple of times, but it is very important, is this case is about whether we had to do a 343. And for me to go in and take on the question of whether or not it's a good idea to do this program or not would have been self-defeating, and it would have been exactly what Justice Nakayama asked. It's a genuine issue, but it's not a material fact. Your Honor.
We were talking about the exemptions, and,
yes.
And Ms. Kupau-Odo says that would be a viable, approach or a way in which that the folks at the ICA identified that it had so many concerns about individuals who wanted to go collect for their children and the like would be able to have that kind of collection accommodated in a reasonable way.
Okay.
Is there, would you agree with that exemption process is a viable alternative or a viable way of accommodating, I guess, the desire to have relatively small collectors be able to still engage in that activity if one assumes that that's desirable?
No, Your Honor, and the reason it would not be a viable option is that, as this court knows better than anybody, that we have to undertake, when looking at an exemption, we have to look at all of the cumulative effects, and we can't segment it. So if the activity is aquarium collection, I don't believe I would advise my clients to say give 70 exemptions every 3 months or 300 exemptions a year without a study of the environmental impacts. I do think that council has identified another viable option, and which is to have one environmental assessment done and somehow piggyback those. I don't say that's impossible, but I don't believe the exemption process that has been identified would in fact be applicable in the absence of any other statute.
So that would be done by some applicant or group of applicants?
Yes.
Is that, what's the process for identifying who among the 100 and however many folks you talked about earlier, 100 plus, would be the one, or would it be the requirement that
goes
be shared
back
among
to, that actually goes back to a question that was asked of the appellant, is what about injunctive relief? And I think the answer that I would give to that, to both that question asked before and your question now, is if the court were to rule that adversely to us, we simply wouldn't issue any more permits, and the first person who wanted a permit would have to do a study.
Mr. Winoff, already there's an exemption for minor alterations in the conditions of land, water, or vegetation.
Yes.
It seems to me either that particular exemption or an exemption very much like it could be applied if the department sought to do something in that light. And it's, of course, the number of fish that are allowed by permit is not by statute. It's by what the department did in its own rules. So it's the department that decided, for example, to, in 13-75-14, to specify that you could take up to 5 fish per person per day on a recreational permit, which, if it's only not for selling, it's hard to envision how somebody would need almost 2,000 for their own recreational use. It seems to me, just by either modifying what the definition of recreational is, modifying exemption, there's all kinds of avenues available to the department if you want to address the small-time individual person who may or may not want to take their child and do this, and assuming that the parent doesn't want to get around the whole process, of course, by just taking either a net smaller than 3 feet or whatever. But to say that it's almost what the department seems to be arguing is that because there may be a few people out there who are individual collectors for their children, the entire system needs to be driven not by what these permits allow, but theoretically how they could be used for the most minimal of use, and to make decisions based on that narrow application of the permit seems to be looking at it backwards.
The department's argument and the attorney general's argument is that the statute needs to be looked at as a whole, and that this court is sitting, of course, as the Supreme Court, articulating laws for everything far outside of the scope of this particular setting. And so that if the, so we suggest that the court needs to carefully think about what it is going to use for the term action. We're already faced with triggers that involve every use of conservation district land, every use of state funds, every use of state lands.
Actually, that's, I think, the second or third time you've mentioned that it's any use. And we have a decision, it may have been actually written by Justice Nakayama, that says any use, it doesn't mean any use. And in fact,
what decision is that, Your Honor? I'm sorry.
I think it's New Long Valley, where they said, look, just because you're attaching pipes or something, that isn't any use. It had to be something more than significant. So they did not read it literally. So to say that any use comes within HEPA is contrary to our case law.
I'm not familiar with that language in the case that you cited, but I don't believe there's, I just going to respectfully say I don't believe there's a case that says any use of state lands doesn't mean any use of state lands. I'm not familiar with that. There's been very expansive rulings over the years. For example, there's cases that say if you need to go under a state road in order to build your subdivision, that's a use of state lands. I think that
it's 119 Hawaii 103. It said this court already held that use does not mean any use, and the activities under that specific permit, it held that the existing drainage and sewer lines does not constitute use of county lands.
Okay, so use of existing sewer lines is not use of state lands. That's fine. I get that.
Along those lines, Mr. Winoff, can you follow up with your analysis about, in terms of action and the requirement for a HEPA analysis or at least an environmental assessment, how is a commercial permit that would allow for this sort of unlimited taking of species over a period of a year not subject to HEPA, but Aulani's request to take fish for its swimming pool is covered?
I don't think Aulani was covered. The DLNR thought that. They didn't ask my department for that. That's an administrative action. That was their interpretation of that particular document. I don't agree with it. So if we had briefed that or if we'd been asked, I believe we would have told them it's not covered. Going back, I just want to, the last point I want to make, and it's really my first point, too, is, you know, thank you, Your Honor, for pointing out that case to me. I do actually remember now the use of sewers. It was not considered state land, but I will stand by my belief and position that the triggers are very broad. And even on, maybe in the briefs and certainly in the argument, appellants conceded, as I think is appropriate, and I applaud them for this.
And so the issue of trigger was conceded here? Or
What they said is that the issue, we all agree that triggers are very broad, and I said, and I believe is fair, that appellants agree that there needs to be some limiting principles. The limiting principles that they pointed to are in discretionary, and I would say that the limiting principle of discretionary approval does not apply at all with respect to an agency action. So,
was trigger litigated here? I mean, has the issue of whether there was a trigger?
We conceded that there was a trigger for purposes of the summary judgment motion, Your Honor.
Please. What part of the law prohibits a recreational permittee from selling?
From what?
Selling aquarium fish.
In order to do that, and thank you for asking that, because I was going to mention that in response to Judge Pollack's discussion, too. There's actually another statute, 189-2, that requires you to have a commercial license in order to sell commercial marine products. So I've enjoyed my lively discussion with your
Honor. We're not quite done. I'm sorry,
okay,
Mr.
Great.
Whiteoff. But is there a matter, does it matter whether it's commercial or not? Do you see a basis for any differentiation of the analysis based on whether the activity is commercial or not in terms of the applicability of the EA requirement? Or is that not a material consideration in your view?
You know, I really like to answer yes or no, and so I'm going to answer yes and then say I think that obviously this court is going to have to give some thought to what the term action means. I don't think that the court will find upon reflection that saying it's any purposeful human activity is going to be something that is going to be a workable definition. Whether
So what's your definition? Just give me your definition as best you articulate it, what you think the definition should be.
My definition is a building development or specific undertaking of a similar kind. And the reason that I said that is that, I mean, I think this is an area for incremental development of the law. Every case that we've talked about, every case that this court has come down with has been, in fact, a building or development.
Well,
of that
I'm sorry to interrupt you while you're on that point,
yes,
because let me ask you about the Ohana case, right? This is a case on the Big Island that didn't involve.
Except that one I was going to say, but thank you. Go ahead. I'm listening.
Oh, okay. Because that was a case that involved growing imported algae, right, on state land.
Right.
And clearly our court determined that that was an action. So how does that fit with your definition of action? Did you think that was just wrongly decided, or is there some way that is action, but this activity, the permitting activity of taking a fish out of the ocean to the extent that it's allowed, doesn't qualify as action?
There wasn't any specific discussion in that case about whether it was an action. I read the case just this morning again. The issue simply didn't come up. People didn't brief it. Any decision that this court made with respect to whether that was an action or not an action was dicta. I think that is an important case. I didn't mean to overlook it. I was going to say that except for that case, every case that this court has decided, but in fashioning its,
so a permitting,
in fashioning its definition, there's nothing in that case that would help this court.
Is there? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay.
And where do you derive that from the statute? In other words, your definition is that it's development based, sort of a project, a construction project, a highway, a redevelopment, a subdivision. Where do you get that from the statute?
There's nowhere in the statute, because the statute says project or program. In some of the cases, like when I talked about this in my brief to the circuit court, I actually cited a case from California where the word that they use is project. I talked about that earlier, and they actually, I forget the exact words that California used, but California was also talking about
a program building. So a program, in DLNR's view, a program that would allow removal of all aquarium fish from the state of Hawaii would not be an action because it's not construction.
Yes, I guess.
And a program that would allow removal of all endangered species, fauna, flora, from our conservation lands would not be a program or project because it's not construction.
I don't know. I mean, it's easy to go each way, Your Honor. I mean, are we going to take the position that that my coming in here and turning on the lights is an action?
A program that would allow removal of, the coral reef is not an action because it doesn't involve construction. It's just removal, and it's not construction, so therefore it's not an action.
When I responded to Justice Recknerwald's questions, I don't believe I said that the only thing that could be an action would be building a building or development. And if I did, then I misspoke, because what I meant to say is a building or development or some sort of analogous type of program. The question, the specific issue that you have before you is whether this particular activity is a project or a program. I think it is an extraordinarily difficult question that the agency has not been given guidelines in the statute. The Department of Attorney General have not been given guidelines in the statute, nor has this court. And so I suggest and request and humbly ask that this court answering the question in this case.
Other than the fact that the types of cases that we've decided have all fit into the category that you've described, is there anything about the purposes of the statute? I asked if it was in the plain language. You said it's not there in the plain language. Anything in the purpose of the statute, the other language of the statute, the legislative history that would lead you, because after all, we're trying to effectuate the intention of the legislature to indicate that that's what the legislature wanted.
Well, I mean, I think the legislature has certainly conveyed very clearly that the environment is an important consideration to be given every benefit, but that doesn't mean that. So I'm going to say no, though. Because they made we got CEQA, we got NEPA, all of those things cover some things and don't cover everything else. The legislative history that tells us the environment is very important doesn't help us to draw the line. I think we all agree that some things are studied and some things are not studied. And where exactly, and over here, this is clearly not covered, this clearly is covered. I don't think the legislative history helps us to draw the fine line that we're facing in this case. With respect to this, what I think we do have is the structure of this document tells us that under the argument being made by appellants and to some extent that we're talking about here, the term action isn't even necessary. Why do you even need action if it covers everything that's already in there? It could just be, we don't even need it. Anything that uses state land or uses state fund requires an environmental analysis. But no, it's an action that uses it. Yes, Your Honor.
We're beyond the time, and my comment is
way over.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The issues are of such importance, and of course the point of oral argument is to assist the court, and this certainly has been of assistance to me.
No, I mean, as long as I'm answering questions, I'll sit down when the court tells me, because I am done.
I understand.
I'm happy to continue answering the questions.
We can end.
All right. Any further?
Actually, I want to hear the rest of what you're saying about an action is not necessarily, it's not covered by the statute. So you're saying that everything, all actions without a quote would be covered by the statute, and there's a specific reason why they put action in this particular statute.
Yes. So, I mean, I think I exhausted my point on it. I think what we've argued, and I think plenty of your own cases say, well, I think we would all agree that the fact that the word action, that's an action that uses land, that means something different and additional to than any use of state land. And so I know, I'm confident that this court is going to try to put some content into the word action. So I think we're all on the same page with that. The question is, what is the content that we're going to put in? I would submit that some of the arguments have made here would, in fact, drain the word action of any content, and I would suggest that that is not an appropriate reading of the statute.
Okay.
Very well.
But I think that's your counterargument, is you're advocating, in a sense, that action, because of the arguments that are being made, is inclusive of any activity. I have not heard that argument be made, nor do I think the appellants are making them. I'm talking about the arguments presented to us after the ICA case and to this court.
Well, let me just say, Your Honor, that the briefs in this case, and I believe the cert petition, in fact, says that the appellants believe that the legislature, I'm reading from the brief now, intended that HEPA apply to humanities activities, subject only to the qualification that these activities fall within one of the statute's triggers. So it has been my understanding of appellant's position that they do not believe that the term action carries actual freight. But I mean, whatever, that's just my characterization, really neither here nor there, I guess.
Well, it actually is here or there, because that's the argument of the state. And
all right.
Thank you for your argument. Anything further, Mr. Weinhoff, at this point?
Just to say thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to try to answer the court's very difficult questions. I appreciate that you asked them, because I know they're important to you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Weinhoff. Ms. Kupau-Odo.
Thank you. First, since we're on the subject of our argument and our position on action, it's very clear that applicant action.
Oh, could you turn the light up? Thank you.
Three part, right? First, whether there's a program or project, because that's how it's defined. Then, in the case of private actions, whether there's discretionary consent required of an agency, and then applying the triggers. Those three are met, that's when you have an action, and that's the issue before the
court.
And
then the exemptions.
And that, exactly. Let's not forget the exemptions, because of the concern raised by the ICA about the practical burdens. I do want to discuss one area we haven't touched upon, which is the legal error committed by the ICA in applying the absurd results rule. This court even noticed recently in the Pofolk case that you don't just subjectively call a statute or a plain reading absurd. You have to go back to legislative intent, and you look at the purposes and policies of the Act, which is why this court looked at the aeronautics law and said that, yes, even though the plain reading, it's absurd, because it would mean that rule or landing fees would not apply to federal airports if passed through formal process of rulemaking, that's absurd, but you didn't stop there. You went further and looked at the policies behind the aeronautics laws and trying to develop that area and to make airports self-sustaining, which is what gave you the permission to then apply an alternate construction. Here, ICA did not look at the legislative intent, HEPA's purposes and policies at all. And that's really the error.
Let's come back to the plain language. What's your response to Mr. Weinhoff's argument that, in essence, you read the word action out of the statute, that if it's any of humanity's activities, that's co-equal with trigger, and that we're not giving effect to the word action, which is something that generally our approach to statutory interpretation is every word has some meaning, and we try to derive that meaning. So what's your response to that argument?
The response is, again, that three-part test. The first part of the definition that the legislature wrote for action is program or project. And then whether it's being proposed by an agency or applicant. And because in this case we're talking about an applicant or applicants, numerous applicants, that's when you look at the definitions of applicants. And it is those who are coming forward to the agency requiring their discretionary approval. And then there's other definitions. So it's looking at a bunch of definitions. And again, that's where it comes down to the three-part test, program or project plus discretionary consent, and then the triggers. That's what makes it a HEPA action, and that's why aquarium collection.
But how does program or project, his argument is your definition, I guess, of program or project is so expansive that in essence it's co-equal with trigger.
It's
What's
not.
Your response to that?
No, it's not, because program or project encompasses more than the geographical triggers and administrative triggers noted in the statute. It's beyond just uses of state lands or funds or county lands or funds, beyond reclassification to from conservation to another district. It's, again, the intent is to capture a wide, cast a wide net, and then narrowing down discretionary consent. Do you need an agency's approval? Narrowing down even further, does it fall within one of these triggers that this statute lays out?
Well, Ms. Capel, let's assume that a permitting that allows for taking without any scientific basis, with no studies for the island of Oahu, is an action that clearly is covered by HEPA. Let's make that assumption for the moment. Then your request for relief is not just that the case be remanded for application of HEPA and a determination as to the degree to which this permitting system complies with HEPA, but you are also asking for injunctive relief, which presumably means that the permits that have been granted would be suspended, correct?
Yes.
Why? What is it that is happening at this point that would be of such an indication of immediate injury or a circumstance that requires immediate corrective action, rather than just allowing for HEPA to apply and have the proceedings proceed with the permitting in place?
I'm sorry, actually, if you were going to apply the injunctive relief test, then there may be a need to remand just to then hash out the factual issues, if that's what the
court. I couldn't quite understand you. Why is it that you feel the situation warrants injunctive relief?
Well, injunctive relief meaning that to invalidate the permits. So the permits that are existing, because they were illegal,
aren't they all expired?
Yes, the ones within that 120-day window have expired. But again, DLNR does not contest that some are renewed, that they're continuing. I mean, they don't deny any permits.
So why do we need to issue injunctive relief? There would just be an application for permits, and the HEPA process would apply, and DLNR would process it accordingly.
A ruling by this court would mean that if you rule in our favor, that all of those permits are invalid. That's correct. Yes.
So you believe there's enough in the record right now for an injunctive relief? It's likelihood of prevailing on the merits, assuming that this court finds that this is subject to 343. Then it's the balance of irreparable harm. Is there enough in the record right now to make a determination of irreparable harm? And, of course, the third factor is public interest favors granting of the injunctive relief.
Yes, and because DLNR candidly admits that it's just allowing the industry to take what it wants. I mean, there are no limits. So, yes, I mean, if you then take that logically, it could mean the stripping of our reefs bare. Yes, but
with existing permits, with the permits that are in existence right now, because there is no limit as to how many animals can be taken at this time.
Yes.
What's your response to Mr. Weinoff's argument that the exemption process really is not a feasible alternative here because of the, in essence, in order to apply an exemption, it would have to be the very kind of study that we're talking about, an EA, to determine whether the incremental impact would be of concern?
My response is, if this is a problem of DLNR's own making. If they had just required one environmental assessment, then it could apply mechanisms that are in the statute, such as tiering, where it could then have other applicants incorporate by reference that document. And when it's deciding to apply an EA exemption, it would have a document to refer to come up and determine whether there are cumulative impacts by this one fish collector.
What is your response to the CJ's question about, is that a practicable solution?
Yes, because that's its duty. That's the agency's job, to look at each of these applications as they come in, to take our resources.
Would you agree with him that the exemption, the very practice of adopting such exemptions would itself require, if I understood him correctly, an EA? He would recommend to the agency that it not adopt exemptions without the kind of study that we're talking about here, because of the possibility that, or at least he would be concerned, if I understood correctly, and I hope I'm getting it right, Mr. Weinhoff, but my understanding is there was a concern that he would have about the agency adopting exemptions in these circumstances. What's your response to that?
I'm sorry. I don't know if I misunderstood what he was stating.
I asked him whether the exemption process was a viable alternative to address the concerns that were raised in the ICA about the individual collectors. And his answer was, as I understood it, he thought the process was not a viable one. I'm asking you whether you believe it is or not.
It is, because they have an exemption list, and there are exemption classes, and all they have to do is apply the exemption.
What about this argument about cumulative effect? It's important to determine cumulative effect. How can you determine that from just one application for collecting a few fish?
For cumulative effect, they would need other information, and they have some data from those monthly catch reports, but I think the best way is to at least get one environmental assessment at minimum prepared on the books so that it has the data and it has the input of all stakeholders, not just data from the industry, not just DLNR's own statements about impacts, but that's the root of the problem here.
So you would say there needs to be an EA before an exemption can be granted. Is that what you're saying?
I don't have a position on that I don't want to take a position on that because that's for the agency to decide. Now, if I were to give my opinion, if we are truly dealing with a one fish person on one day just to get one fish for their child's tank, then I think, no one has a problem with that.
What would prohibit them from doing under 343.6? I assume it would be a consultative process, but to say we are thinking of creating an exemption for residents of Oahu or residents in the state of Hawaii. You know, right now they're allowing 2,000 animals for 71 as of the, so that's 140,000 right there. What would prohibit them from saying we're going to allow a 10 fish maximum per person per year or something like that within their regulations, and you don't need to come in for an EA, you don't have to apply for a permit for that? I mean, couldn't they create an exemption for permitting processes for these individuals?
They could create an exemption. And again, the exemptions are guided by the classes that are established by the Environmental Council. Again, going to the council, running the draft by them, and getting approval for the list.
Right, and if it ended up that seemed to be too much, then they could go back and change the exemption or eliminate the exemption.
Yes, and as long as it's consistent with the statutory policies behind HEPA,
their own rule does not require an environmental assessment. It says any agency at any time may request that a new exemption class be added or that the existing one be amended, the request shall be submitted in writing with detailed information. It doesn't require anything.
I'm sorry. I think I misunderstood the question, and that's correct. The process is clear in the rules, Environmental Council's rules, that if agencies, first, they're supposed to come up with lists. DNR has done so, and they can amend the list at any time as long as they go through the process of submitting the draft, getting public comment,
and the exemptions are really for when a specific action has minimal effect or no significant effect. And what we heard today is that they can't do an exemption without an EA, but yet they can issue a permit for unlimited number of fish to be taken without requiring an EA.
Which just begs the question, really, from the point of view of whether an EA is going to be required or an exemption, whether it's going to have a minimal effect. And the fact that there's a child involved, as opposed to an adult that wants to fish, of course, wouldn't be relevant to that. But what would be relevant is, defining what this exemption covers. If it means that every citizen gets to take a certain number of fish, if that amounts to a significant number scientifically, then there may need to be an EA and an EIS. On the other hand, if the total amount allowed under the exemption is for the population of the children of the state, maybe that would be less. Or if there's a specific number that's identified, such as 50 for the island of Oahu, then it would be straightforward. But it still begs the question, what is the impact? Is it minimal or not? Right? And from the information we've received from the affidavits, at least with respect to Oahu, what we're seeing, it appears from the record, is something other than a minimal impact, right? When you have the signature species for the aquarium fish industry seemingly disappearing, certainly at least from the open areas open to collection.
Yes, and there are, I mean, since we're discussing impacts, there are numerous people here today who would jump up and refute the department's contention that there are no impacts. And that's getting to the root of why, of the problem, of why HEPA is so important, because my clients were deprived of the opportunity to participate. And DNR's position in this case, now sanctioned by the ICA, is that it can bury its head in the sand and just hand out these permits freely without public input. And that's why we are asking this court to put an end to that practice.
Anything further, Ms. Kupawa-Odo,
no,
at this
thank
time?
You.
Very well. Thank you to both of our attorneys for your arguments here today. The court will take this matter under advisement.